are you doing? You're just chilling in my office? That is Aerith. She's from a video game. Have you ever played any video games?
Video game.
Well, you're not answering my question. Do you like her? Is she pretty? She's pretty? It's creepy to stare and also rock back and forth. Staring and rocking back and forth while staring at a girl, probably not something you want to do. Yeah, pointing is also out. So what we've learned is that you shouldn't rock back and forth and silently stare and point at a girl you like. Is that cool? Strength, man, that's a little office like this will stink up instantly with
it. Smells nice though.
It's great. I love the smell.
Rich smell. It's not overwhelming. It's just here.
If you were to drink it, it would be overwhelming. In fact, I thought what would be fun is if we did like tiny little sips as we diluted it. So you had like You have to do very, very small sip. The numbness on your tongue will go away pretty quick.
It'll go okay.
You could also like take a little spoon of water too.
Okay.
To cleanse the palate.
Do we just have the one? Do we each have our own water?
No, just one. I'm not that fancy. I mean, I have water, so yeah, I guess we could just share the spoon. We can spoon, Smike. We can spoon.
Oh boy. Let me look at this thing. This is a lovely amber. I don't even know what I'm looking at or looking for.
Well, you're looking at whiskey, but that really doesn't tell the whole story, as you know.
It is a whiskey.
So if you want to see something fun, so swirl it like wine and then watch how fast the alcohol runs down.
Kind of hard for me to tell.
If you hold it up to a light, you can see what's called legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot of legs. It's just kind of.
Well, there are a lot. It's hard to see them. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, the legs are so fast because the alcohol content's so high.
Okay.
It's just running down the glass. That's a good sign for, you know, 120 proof whiskey. It's a bad sign for like 20 proof whiskey because then you should be worried.
So do you want to say something about this? Is this what we're starting with?
I figured this will be a good start to the podcast, and then we'll see where...
I'm excited about this, because I haven't tried this yet.
Okay, well, hi, we are buddies in space. We should do this now while we're sober.
Yes. Okay, I am S. Michael Smith, and you are...
and Michael Carassi. In our hands, we are holding a birthday gift from Smike to myself in these lovely, wonderful scotch glasses made of leaded glass. That my wife gave me. She's not trying to kill me. It's okay. A legit thing.
Right. I understand that.
Riedel. Well, I'm selling it for the audience. These are Riedel or Riedel. I've never been sure how to say it. And I was a waiter, so I have no excuse. So Riedel, I'll just say Riedel. It sounds kind of vaguely pretentious.
Cool.
Riedel sat down years ago.
I believe
ago,
you.
At least 7 or 8 years ago, because these are like the first birthday gift Erica ever got me. So we were just dating. They sat down with a bunch of scotch makers, you know, the big names. And they said, what is the perfect scotch glass?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow someone probably drunk was like, you know what would make a really great scotch glass? Fucking lead. You gotta get lead in there, because that's really, it just brings out the taste of poison, which ultimately is what scotch is.
Which is what we're drinking.
Instead we're drinking just undiluted, pure, concentrated poison.
Now this isn't technically scotch.
This is not. It's not made in
Scotland.
No, it is in no way scotch because the mash on this is very specific.
Right.
So you bring up a good point.
So this is a barley mash.
It's two types of barley. It's sour and it's fermented and unfermented. And there's two. I was just reading on the bottle actually here.
Okay.
Actually, do you want me to give a fine Irish reading of the back of the bottle?
Let's tell people what this is, baby. So we give him a point of reference here.
So what I'm holding in my hands here, this is Redbreast. It's a single pot still Irish whiskey. It's aged 12 years, which is about one third of me age, which is a little disarming. This is cask strength. So, Smike, tell me, what is the alcohol content on this bottle?
It is 59.9%, which is about 120 proof.
Thank you.
Because I know how to add to multiply by two.
Some of our readers may may not be so great with the multiplications.
It's so, a lot of alcohol. It is mostly alcohol.
It is just a bit. Yeah. It's a lot of alcohol. So what makes this special is that it is made from a mash of malted and unmalted barley and then triple distilled in traditional copper pot stills. So.
Okay.
Well.
I'm not sure what the whole malted or unmalted thing is.
Well, you malt, right? You know malt. It's like a hallmark of beer.
I know malted milk balls.
So, I mean, that's malt, right? Okay. So you can kind of picture. Malted
milkshake.
So separate the chocolate and the dairy from that. Just think about the malt, right? It's a fairly distinct flavor.
Okay.
Like, it's pretty, I mean, watered down and diluted because you're thinking like sweets, but
yeah,
malt is a specific flavor and you get a lot of it in beer.
It's almost, I'm not sure how to describe it. I almost want to say buttery, but not really.
I think of like oats or hay. It's got that grassy kind of thing. It's okay. Round, fills up your whole mouth, the flavor. I may also not be doing it justice. We haven't even had a sip yet. But so just like, you know, bourbon has to come from Bourbon County. That's like the only American thing that they can do. It's like, oh, well, if it's not from Bourbon County, then it's not bourbon. But they use a very specific malt mixture. I'm sorry, a very specific mash.
Okay.
In bourbon that makes it bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really as much about what's
which
in it.
Which is a rye mash?
I think so.
All right.
But it's not rye, the liquor.
There's probably more in that book about this.
Yeah, which I'm going to get to. I'm traveling at some point soon, so I'll have plenty of time to read on the plane. So this is a quintessential Irish whiskey, according to this, because of the malt breakdown, the malted and unmalted barley, but also the fact that it's triple distilled. So it goes through three distillations in a copper pot still. Okay. So, I mean, copper, it's like, to a much lesser extent, it's like a cask, right? An oak cask. It's going to instill some kind of flavor. There's some kind of transfer of flavor. So I'm just going to speak to what you said before about you weren't really sure.
Well, it's been aged in, a still, or not the copper, but the wooden cask, right? It would be aged for 12 years in some sort of wooden thing, I would think.
Yeah, they don't really talk about that, surprisingly. I had looked this up. I had more facts, and I've lost them. But yeah, it's got to be. I mean, the flavor, you'll see, it has to have been kept in oak. But I know that the distillation process in copper has something to do with what makes it characteristically different.
Okay.
And it is not the same mash as scotch. That was my whole point.
Okay.
So just like Bourbon County, cool. Yes, it's not from Bourbon County, so it can't be bourbon, but it's really the mash is what technically makes
it's
something.
It's all very whiskey nerd. Whiskey geek, sorry.
Whiskey geek?
Sorry, whiskey geek.
Whiskey geek? All
right, I'll put this down there. Safely and
okay.
Softly.
So what were the instructions that you told me? Because I thought they were pretty good about how to drink this.
All right, according to what I read on a Whiskey Geek website.
Whiskey Geek?
I don't remember the name of it.
Well, I'm just sure. Anytime you say Whiskey Geek,
if you look up Whiskey Geek, this guy's blog will come up.
Wasn't the Cracked article?
No.
That was very funny.
That was how I found this particular one. But right. When I was reading about how to drink this, especially because it is cask strength, which is undiluted, and most whiskeys you would get would be diluted some extent, as with pretty much any alcoholic
spirit
beverage.
They have to dilute or it's this strength.
Right. It's undiluted. So the recommendation for whiskey in general. And this especially is to add a little bit of water.
And how do you know
not
you've done the right amount of water?
Not tap water, but filtered or distilled or natural spring water, because the chlorine in water will interfere with the flavor of the whiskey.
This is chlorine removed, very well filtered water.
Okay. And the recommendation is to use a spoon or something is not a lot, and just add a little bit until you sip it and your tongue does not immediately become numb by the alcohol.
Spoiler alert, undiluted immediately numbs your tongue. I have, for the sake of science, tested that and can 100% confirm that that is the case. So take a smell, because there, when you hear whiskey, I think a drunk somewhere in an alley. But, like, you smell this, and that's not at all. There's a shit ton of stuff going on with this aroma, right? Swirl it there around. There is. Swirl it around. That'll open it up. Get your nose in there.
I'm so bad at picking out.
I'm not asking you to pick out. I'm just asking you to.
I know.
Really?
I can smell it. I'm getting a little. Getting a little fumage there.
But that's my point.
It's hard for me to pick out any of the individual notes. And I can never do that with wine. I can't even do it with sake. I drink sake all the time.
I'm still not sure. Well, no, there are sake.
Fruit, floral, and mushroom. And anything more narrow than that in sake is a little lost on
me. But I told you the secret to that is if you just say something fairly confidently, the trick with that is most people instantly smell that thing. Which is why... We did that
the other night.
Did you?
No, I did that to you the other night.
Oh.
Because we were having that ginger stuff with vodka.
Right. Uh-huh.
Which we had at the last recording, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had it again.
We had it with rum previously.
For the podcast.
For the podcast. And we were out of rum, so we used vodka instead. And I said, oh, it tastes like what we had the other night, except more potato-y. And I was kind of kidding.
Right.
But you took a drink and you're like, oh, I can really taste the potato.
But then it became a thing because your wife's like, you don't taste potato. I'm like, no, I really taste potato, Mel. By the way, I still feel so bad that I lost us the fucking game because my rolls were so bad in Pathfinder. I'm still mad about that.
It's just dice. It's not you.
Your dice tower is failing us.
Blame the dice tower.
No, I'm blaming me. I'm just mad. My point to this is you should have a hard time picking things out.
Oh, well, good.
Because this is so... So I'm going to get a little... I'm going to wax poetic for a second because I do think there's a lot to say about
wax
this.
Wax away.
So working in finer restaurants in New York, as I may have mentioned in the past, douchebag, whiz geek, I took a spirits class. It was actually a great class. And we also got plenty of wine training. And the one thing that holds true amongst the aged stuff, for one thing, and just tends to be the finer quality things, is that they need to open on a physical level, on a chemical level. So what I mean is, with a fine wine, that's why you open it, right? 2 hours in advance. That's why you pour it, right? You aerate it.
You have the special aerator thing you pour it through.
Fuck that.
I don't know what it does. I don't understand that.
I'm too old school. I need real cork, and I need to just decant. Give me a decanter. Like, we did it for real in Gramercy Tavern. We lit a candle.
What?
It was a dark waiter station. You would light a special tallow candle.
Did you have to say a chant as you were doing this?
You threw salt over one eye, and then you stabbed a child with the other. It was very hard to do at the same time and not drop the wine. But then so the candle backlit the decanter, and then you would take the wine bottle, because it was like a 20-year-old wine, right? Because a lot of people would spend a lot of money there. So you had to, I'm sorry, you would not the decanter, the bottle. You wanted to backlight the bottle with the candle because there was sediment.
Mm-hmm.
So you needed to decant it up until the exact moment when the sediment got to the neck.
Oh.
So once it got to the neck, you just stop.
Because you don't want the sediment in the glass?
No, in the decanter and anything.
Okay.
So what that did a couple things. So first of all, it got the sediment out of the wine, right? Because you poured the good stuff into the decanter and the sediment's in the bottle. It also aerates, just the act of pouring it onto the glass wall of the decanter, and that's why they're, as far as I understand it, that's why they're big and flanged like that.
Okay.
Because it forces the wine to hit a wide surface area, and that forces aeration. The whole point of all that is to unlock the flavor of the wine. I've done this. They've done these with the waiters. They would have us do tastings. You take a $20 bottle, take a $20 bottle of wine out on a cheap date, take a 20-year-old bottle of wine, drink it as soon as you open it. It may taste great, but then you have it a couple hours later, and it's like, holy shit, that's a different wine.
Okay.
It just has to unlock.
I believe you, but this sounds like bullshit.
I can't.
I know. I just want to...
You know what? You'll never fucking know, because I would be killing you by having you try it. So maybe it's all flim-flam.
I'm just speaking for the listeners out here who might be thinking, this sounds like bullshit. I agree. It does sound like bullshit. Although I trust Mike,
I am a manipulative motherfucker, as we know, but I'm not manipulating you right now. It is legit because I've done it many times. I would encourage, I think everyone once in their life, except people with...
except who would make this the last thing they do in their life.
Maybe it's a, a great way to go out, man. Edward S. Burroughs, someone went out like that. I don't fucking know. I'm making shit up now. Who died reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead?
Oh, I don't know.
Some weird beatnik guy.
Aleister Crowley? I don't
know. No, he was there when it was written. Mysticism! The English were weird for a while. I think everyone once in their life should absolutely experience a really fine wine. Just once. I know that there are all sorts of economic factors that would prohibit that. But once in your life, even if you have to go out and buy it yourself and then do it at home and just read about what to do, it's worth it. Because there is nothing like a wicked old bottle of wine. Like that experience of drinking it, it is just fucking mind-blowing. Because you're like, oh, all that snooty shit is true. If you get the right bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm leading to is there's something different with liquor. So we took the spirits class with this master mixologist guy.
Okay.
And he had us take some Lagavulin. That was the first time I had Lagavulin.
Some what?
My favorite scotch, the PD campfire scotch, Lagavulin.
Can you say that slowly?
Lagavulin.
Lagavulin.
Let me say it in its native tongue. Lagavulin.
All right. That sounds better.
It's from the wee island of Alay. It's off the coast of Scotch. It's off the coast. I've had too much scotch. It's a peat bog. It's surrounded by a peat bog. So what they do is instead of cutting down wood to smoke the malts, they fucking go and take a saw in the water and they cut a giant piece of peat and they use that to smoke it. And it's going to smoke great because it's so wet.
Huh.
But it basically puts a campfire smell in the bottle.
Huh.
It's amazing. So that is my favorite scotch. Since that day. And what he did was very similar to what I'm having us do actually now. So I'm trying to recreate that experience for
you.
With this incredibly lengthy lead up where we're like 17 minutes into the podcast.
This is science here.
We haven't had any alcohol yet. So what he did was he said, take a sip of Lagavulin. And we were all like, wow, that's just drinking a campfire.
Okay.
He said, okay.
So are you going to do this now?
So now let's take a sip.
A little sip.
Dude, you're not going to be able to taste anything if you take too big a sip. So tiny sip. It doesn't taste that good, and it numbs your tongue pretty quickly.
Oh, my God.
Have some water.
Oh, my God.
It's not enjoyable, right?
It's overwhelming. It is literally overwhelming.
Right, and that's my point.
The water oddly tasted kind of good when I had that first sip of water.
Yeah, because the liquor just took all of the moisture out of your tongue, and your mouth is like, oh, thank God.
No, just that little bit of whatever alcohol was left on my tongue.
Oh, it
kind of, the water kind of let me taste it for a second.
So this is the next stage. So take one little spoonful of water and dump it in. It's not going to be enough. But what we learned in this class was that when you have a liquor like this, especially one that's undiluted in the first place, there is a chemical change that will occur by introducing water to it.
Okay.
It is not unlike letting a fine old wine sit for a couple hours. It is that same. Think of, you ever take clothes out of the wash and they're all wound up and they're all like, yes, tight, and then mm-hmm. you like kind of shake them out?
Yeah.
It's that.
Okay.
So what we had was the right out of the wash, crumpled up, not enjoyable.
I'm not going to wear that.
Right? Now, this is still not where we want it. I don't think it's all enough right. water yet, but let's take another sip and see if you can detect a change.
Excuse me.
It still burns. My tongue is slightly less numb, and I'm getting more flavor out of it.
Ah, damn it.
You okay?
I'm okay. I'm just, this is probably going to get me hiccuping.
Oh, okay.
Which will be so amusing for people listening.
Did you detect a change? You can be honest.
A little bit. It's hard to tell if my tongue's just sort of getting used to it, but it's still not quite where.
No, I told you, we're not there yet. So yeah. Now I'm going to go with spoon number two.
Okay.
We're probably getting pretty close at this point. So that's why I'm doing spoon by spoon. So try another spoon.
All right.
Oh, swirl it around a little bit too. I didn't do that actually.
I did that.
Okay. I did not. Maybe I was just drinking all water sitting on top.
Hmm.
So we've introduced two spoonfuls of water to this. Even the smell is more diluted. Get your nose in there. You should get less heat.
Yeah, it's...
It tingles less, right?
I think so. Well, it's not making me start to cough when I breathe it.
Right, so that's a good sign. All right, so take another sip. Now the finish is long.
Okay, yeah, I get some sort of flavor now.
Where it was just too much before, right?
Yes.
You can dilute more. Oof. If you want. I might leave this.
I'm going to have another dilute because this is, I can taste it. It's a long, kind of a, not kind of, it's, there's definitely a lot of bitterness in it.
You're drinking toxins. I mean, brown liquor is basically a bunch of toxins. So yeah, it's going to be bitter. It's, I mean, it's a lot of malts and stuff, you know, that are barley, all that kind of stuff. But you want to get to the point where your tongue is not going numb.
Right.
And you're still going to get a bite out of it. You still want a bite.
I'm going to have a little sip of water.
Yeah, yeah. Cleanse your palate too. That's a good idea. But that's where we're driving to. We're driving to the ideal drinking conditions.
For science.
For science. While you do that, I'm going to just do this because this is actual crystal. So this is going to sound really nice on the mic. I think I just deafened everyone. I wouldn't put any more water in.
I don't think I'm going to. Okay. I don't need any more water. It's,
did you do too much?
It's no, I don't think so. It's lightened up. It's drinkable. Mm-hmm. It's my tongue can pick things out. It's really hard to describe for me cuz it's like
Try.
It's like bitter butter.
Okay. Do you get caramel? Cuz I get a lot of caramel.
Maybe,
on
but
it.
Not a lot of sweetness. I'm not getting any sweetness in it.
You really should. I mean, the mash will have a similarity to sweetness, but it's not. But do you get caramel?
Maybe.
Like, have you ever had a caramel that tastes you get kind of in the back of your mouth that isn't the sweet?
Sure.
If you don't, it's okay. I'm just trying to give you, I mean, I read up on it. I know that caramel's supposed to be something that's in it.
Okay.
But it's supposed to be a lot of spice and a lot of fruit.
I get the sort of a caramel smell to it.
Yeah, it's aromatics. This is a very aromatic, intensive liquor.
All right. So there we go.
Science.
So, now that we've finished with our introduction...
23 minutes later.
We can edit that down, right? All right.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally going to do that. I'm not going to do
that. So what else is going on?
The Rogue One trailer came out.
Yes. You made us watch that.
It looks, you say it like it's a bad thing.
No, I thought it looks interesting. It's still pretty early to say, you know, this is going to be good.
Spoiler. So, if you're listening at home and you don't want anything spoiled about Rogue One, skip forward 5 seconds starting right now. Darth Vader's confirmed. They cast the guy who stole the Walkman from him in Guardians of the Galaxy. That's who's playing him. All right, and we're back. So that rumor was right. I am super excited for this movie in a way that I was not actually excited for Episode 7. So, Episode 7, I fought the urge to get excited, and everyone told me I should be excited, and that I was sorely let down. But this is not J.J. fucking Abrams directing it.
Right.
It's Gareth Edwards, who I really, really like. I really All like right. him.
What else has Gareth done?
So Eric and I saw his first movie, Monsters, which was like a Netflix movie. Not like a Netflix movie, like you'd only really find it on Netflix. And it was the movie that basically launched Scoot McNairy, who's now everywhere after doing this movie. You're making some interesting faces while drinking this.
I think you have to.
Go slow.
I am. Look, I'm going slow.
Yeah? Yeah, you are. You've got more water in there than I do.
Okay. Well, whatever.
Well, I always drink faster than you. So, Monsters is really cool. It's like a it's like an alien kind of movie. But basically, the premise is a satellite from outer space, you know, like one of our satellites, comes back infected with some alien, like, flora.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes all these alien creatures to grow on Earth. And so
this sounds like some awful 80s
movie. I know, that's what's cool, right? Like, it sounds like it's going to be shitty. He did all the special effects on his laptop. So I know this is how much I like this movie. So the premise is that there's a large area like in South America that just no one can live because the aliens have taken over. They're like big lumbering things that are just extremely dangerous. But they kind of stay where they were.
So this happened and people just kind of dealt with it by not going there.
Yeah, it's like, shit, okay, well, I guess we'll just pick up and leave this area. So, but it's not really about that at all. You don't see them very much and they're very threatening, but it's like, okay. But it's all about this one guy, he's like a photographer and he gets hired by his boss to get his daughter back. And they have to somehow get through or around or over this zone to get from South America back to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into like this sort of, you know, Romancing the Stone-esque adventure movie. But mm-hmm. It's all about character. Like, it's okay. Just about these two characters. And all he did was the director and these two actors just went around. And I don't think they even had a recurring production company with them. They just sort of hired local actors for all the scenes. So the scenes are awesome because like they're haggling with locals. And you're like, this seems like they're really haggling with locals. And you're like, oh, I think they are. Really cool movie. Very, very character driven. With some really impressive use of restraint with special effects. And then, so that was his movie. That was what he did. And then Hollywood's like, you're really good at this. You should do Godzilla. So then they handed him a huge budget and said, okay, go do Godzilla. And he did, I thought, a very good Godzilla film.
I still haven't seen that one.
Neither's Erica. I'm the only one. But I was watching it, and I was going to be a guilty pleasure movie, and I was like, oh, Gareth Edwards is, I forgot. And then watching, I'm like, this is actually really good. I mean, Bryan Cranston is in it, and you know, he's obviously a very good actor, which lends it some gravitas. But Ken Watanabe's in it. Mm-hmm. Had a good cast. The bad, not Scarlet Witch's brother. What's this? The Fast Runner. The one who was in both X-Men Quicksilver? And Avengers. Quicksilver. The bad Quicksilver, who is a good actor. But the guy who played Quicksilver in Avengers?
Yes.
Two? He was in it too. But
bad because the character was not done as well in the
Avengers 2 as it was in the Marvel Cinematic X-Men. Universe as then as it was in the X-Men universe.
Yes.
The Fox one. But great cast. Very good movie. So what he, and that is, you know, spectacle film, monster, huge budget. The Godzilla looked awesome in that. So basically what this guy did in like two movies was prove that he could do a mega low budget, homemade monster movie that was really just about two people.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately scaled from that to fucking Godzilla, Hollywood remake number 16. So I think he's a very impressive director. And what I saw in this trailer is that it's a lot of really personal stuff with this sort of Ocean's 11-esque group of like heist people that band together to steal the Death Star plans. And then it ends with them running full tilt at a bunch of AT-ATs and getting fucking destroyed. So that seems awesome to me because it's like, all right, this is not the shit we're used to seeing in a Star Wars movie.
So just to clarify for people who aren't already totally familiar with this.
It's, shame on you.
It's a prequel mm-hmm. to the original Star Wars movie.
Which could also be said for the prequel trilogy, but it's going to be better than those.
By default. Prequel. These are the boffins who were...
No. Nope. I made that mistake too. That was Return of the Jedi. Many boffins died to bring the second Death Star plans.
Oh.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, we're finally going to figure out what the fuck a boffin is. But no, it's... Mon Mothma is in it. She's in the trailer. They cast a younger woman to play Mon Mothma. The head of the... Remember her?
No.
She was that woman who had a bowl hair, like a page boy haircut, and she had that weird gown. In Return of the Jedi. And she's the one who said, many boffins died to bring us.
I do not have the encyclopedic knowledge of Star Wars movies that you have.
She's a fairly forgettable character except for the many boffins line.
Okay.
So that is fair. But they recast the character younger, obviously, and they did a good job. But the movie looks badass. The main chick looks badass as shit. Like, they just have her going full up against, like, four stormtroopers in hand-to-hand combat, and she wins. It looks awesome. I'm very excited for that. Because, you know, Daisy Ridley did a fine job, but Star Wars needs, like, a gritty female character. It's never had that before, you know?
Okay.
No? Think about it. Name one. Name a gritty, badass chick from the Star Wars universe.
I really want to say Leia.
Nope.
She was a princess, but she could get the job done.
I'm not saying she couldn't, but she was never gritty. She was in a gown for, I believe, the entire first movie, for one thing.
You don't have to dress down to be gritty. Okay, maybe you do. Maybe you do.
I feel like they're kind of intrinsically linked. Now, you could say that the metal bikini getup is gritty, but I would say that that's just sexploitation.
Well, okay. Was her bounty hunter costume not gritty?
That's close. I'll give you that, but you couldn't even tell it was a woman.
Well, then that's really gritty.
What?
I don't know.
This is a woman who gets by on feminine wiles and badassdom, from what I can tell from the trailer. Very excited. Forrest Whitaker's in it. There's some badass Asian dude with a bow staff who beats up a stormtrooper with it. That's badass. I'm saying badass a lot, because that's the one thing I took away from this movie. Badass. So I'm very excited. I have a really good feeling about this.
So, do you have a feeling about Suicide Squad?
I really want to see it.
I do too. I think I want to see that certainly more than I have any interest in seeing Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
Because I don't know what's going to happen in it. I think there's more that can be done with it.
It's almost freeing. You're not stuck.
It really has to be character driven.
Right. So here's what's really interesting about that. Will Smith is in it.
Yes.
So what do we know about Will Smith and what he will and will not do in a movie? He will not do a movie that he isn't the main character in.
That he's not a smarmy but lovable wise ass.
No. He has to, but also, yes. Okay, yes. But he also has to be the main character. He turned down Django Unchained, thank God. Because he felt that Christoph Waltz had a little too much screen time compared to Django.
Huh.
That's what he said.
Okay.
So his rule is, I will not be in a movie unless I am absolutely, unequivocally the star of the film. But he's in an ensemble movie.
Yes.
And a villain ensemble movie in which he will probably play a smarmy badass.
Yes.
Sniper.
But the least evil of the badass,
I think he has a son. There's something about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But even in the little bits I've seen in the previews, mm-hmm. he doesn't seem nearly as
psychotic
evil or psychotic yeah. as any of the other characters.
But the other characters are
he's
really
just Will Smith.
Right, it's the same, and I don't want to pair them because I think they're very different actors. But that's my problem with Denzel Washington. I don't think I've really seen a movie with Denzel Washington where it isn't Denzel Washington playing Denzel Washington playing a character. Same with Vince Vaughn. You don't get a movie with Vince Vaughn doing anything but Vince Vaughn. In True Detective season 2, they at least found a way to use that well, but it was still Vince Vaughn,
mm-hmm.
just talking slower, you know, because he was ponderous and had a lot on his mind. But really what has me the most excited is I just hearing all these crazy on-set rumors about Jared Leto and all the shit he did as the Joker. Involving, like, bringing a horse head to the cast as a gift and, like, just
what?
Crazy
all right,
shit.
I haven't read any of this stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything else, but...
All right.
I keep reading stories of, like, he just was, like, not in the Heath Ledger way, because I think he knew, like, okay, Heath Ledger sort of owns his role. But
yes.
Everyone thought that, you know...
It's obviously a completely different take on the character.
Right, well, I mean, so everyone thought that Jack Nicholson owned the Joker and no one was going to do it better.
Yes.
And then Heath Ledger came along and it's like... Holy fuck. Okay, this is amazing. So I think Jared Leto, who's not a bad actor, we know, he has an Oscar, right? After the movie with, the drug movie with Matthew McConaughey. I don't remember.
Sure.
Yeah. He was cross-dresser. What was that movie called? I didn't see it. So
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know the name of it.
Okay, well, cheers to that. But yeah, I think he went in and he said, well, we need to do a... Exactly. A different take on the Joker, and I have to go, like, balls out crazy with it. So I think he just became the Joker for a while.
Yeah, I made the face again.
I know.
Not as much.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a really interesting concept. I mean, how freeing is it to focus on the bad guys? You don't have the weight of the world Superman story. You don't have the brooding Batman story. You just have fucking a bunch of bad people who are psychotic for the most part.
It does look like, what's her name playing Harley? Is really going to steal the show, though.
Yeah, yeah, you're getting that sense in the trailer, too?
Yeah.
I keep seeing that, and that character, if done right, should steal the scene.
Yes.
Pretty much every time. I mean, even the cartoon, she stole the scene most of the time.
Yeah.
And she was up against Mark Hamill, but that voice actress is doing really well. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that she is going to... I mean, they're doing the baseball bat toting... Like
mallet toting.
Oh, is it a mallet?
She's got a mallet in it.
Oh, I guess I just thought it was a baseball bat.
I think she probably upgraded at some point. I think we've seen baseball bat and then mallet.
Okay. That's a good upgrade.
I assume it's that order.
Right.
I don't know why you'd go mallet to baseball bat. That just seems stupid.
Well, maybe your forearms weren't in shape yet. You're like, I need to go back to the minor leagues and swing this. Okay, but you're still gonna end up back to the mallet. Mallet's always the end point you're going for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. So,
all right. So, can we talk about this for a second?
Mallets?
No, not mallets. But you've got something going on tomorrow. Kind of a big deal.
Or
do we not want to talk about this?
No, I don't mind. So, right. As I'm sure I mentioned before, my kid is awesome, but he sucks at eating.
No, he is good at eating. He's just very picky about what he eats.
He sucks at eating the wide array of foods available to him in the world that he should be eating.
From your perspective, he sucks at eating. From his perspective, he's great at it.
If you give him one of five things and only five things, yes.
Yes.
If it's butt and crackers, so if it's peanut butter and crackers, if it's some form of mac and cheese, if it's... Actually, we did get him to start eating frozen blueberries. If it's pizza, when he feels like it.
Or any sort of candy, I think.
Well, candy is not food. Candy is okay. Bad parenting on our part. So, yeah, it's very frustrating. And I finally convinced... So everyone's been like, oh, it's a phase. I'm like, you know what? It's been 14 months. That is not a phase. That is more than half his life. And to which I would be told, no, it's a phase. It's lasting a while. I'm like, how about this? He's got us played. If it isn't a phase, he's figured out that he can just bully his parents into only feeding him what he wants.
I think that's what's going on,
personally. I think that has a lot to do with it, too.
So you have contacted a child whisperer of some sort.
Of some sort. So we're going through like the autism early intervention program. Just because his doctor recommended it, I think, because it's free. So basically, we're going to get a free evaluation. And, I mean, the caseworker who came to get it set up, she was watching him, and she's like, he's a really high jumper. He's really advanced at jumping. And she's like, I don't think they're going
to... Which is, a thing you can be. A thing a child can be. Oh, yeah. That sounds weird to me.
With kids sounds weird.
He's advanced in jumping.
He jumps like a 3-year-old. Maybe a 4-year-old. My kid can jump, that's all
he
I'm
does
saying.
Like jumping.
He's very good at
jumping. I have
jumping.
Seen it frequently.
He's his great jumping. Jumper.
He likes to jump. Just jump around.
Jump up. Oh, and get down.
And get down, yeah. He also likes to jump in the...
bounce house.
The bounce house, which mm-hmm. is the inflatable air thing.
I think people know what a bounce house is.
Well, what? I don't know.
What else would a bounce house be? I'm curious.
I don't know.
Is it a house of bounce? Is it like just like a rapper's mansion? I could see that.
It'd be, you know, where you get kicked out of your house and you got to bounce somewhere else and stay there for a couple of days.
It's a flop house? That's okay. I get it.
Anyway, it's inflatable. You keep it indoors. I don't think you've ever had it outside, have you?
No, we opened it at Christmas.
Right.
It was meant to get us through the winter, which, you know, it helped.
Yeah. He burns off a lot of energy in there. For sure.
But he needs us nearby. Like, he needs us to either participate or at least watch him goof around. Mm-hmm. Like, my envisioning of it, and he's too young to use it technically because it's supposed to be 3 and up. But again, he's an advanced jumper. But I envision just him jumping for hours on end happily and just letting us clean the house or whatever. That has not yet happened. But
okay.
Maybe that was foolhardy and it's...
So you've got your child whisperer. Coming here tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, yeah. We have to, I had to keep him up later because the only time slot, so it's so stupid. So the time slot that this woman's coming, she's the only one she could fit him in on, is not when he eats. It's at 1:30. It's when he's normally sleeping.
Uh-huh.
So we have to try to rearrange his sleep schedule. And this is what you do with kids. Like, you're constantly trying to work around their sleep schedule.
Right.
Because the minute you fuck it up, oh my God, it's terror. It turns into a horror movie. Every time you think of a screaming child in Walmart, that kid has probably not slept enough. That's just pretty safe bet. So if you ever want to really yell at someone and make them feel like a shitty parent, they have a screaming kid in the store, you should be like, you should probably let your kid sleep more. And then walk away. If they hit you, it's within their right, to be fair. But, so she's coming and we're going to try to get it to line up so that he's not too tired to eat at that point. But so she can watch him not eat what we want him to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to find that he's not autistic because there's nothing that he does except this, which isn't even the way he exhibits it isn't even on the spectrum. It's just him kind of being a jerk about it.
But they kind of understand that they're not necessarily.
So what I'm expecting is that it can be like, we can't do this. Like, we can't give you free services. Your child isn't autistic. And we'll be like, yes, we know. We'd rather you give your services to autistic children and help their families out. But they can give us tips, and then we may be able to hire, because these aren't the government. These are agencies that contract with them.
Okay.
So this is theoretically someone that we could take them to clinics with, which is really what I wanted in the first place. I never wanted to do this program. You know, I just wanted to pay someone to be a clinician and we could meet. And so I'm hoping that's kind of where it ends up. But yeah, I would love for her to show up and be like, your kid's just playing you.
That's what we think. We're so hesitant to give you any advice on this, though, because we do not have a child.
Mm.
And I appreciate that while it may look like something to us, we don't have the experience that you have, and, you know, we're not in the same position you are, so...
You've grown so much since I have had a son, Smike. I've learned that it is the prerogative of every intelligent non-parent to give advice to young parents.
Right. And we're trying not to do that. I hope...
You've gotten better.
Okay.
And you weren't the only ones. Don't think I'm singling you out. But I firmly, and this is what I tell like friends who are having kids. I say, it is the prerogative of every incredibly intelligent person without children to give you advice because they apply logic. And it is your responsibility to 100% disregard it. Because unless your child's on fire and they're saying to pour water in them, they probably don't know. Because the problem is you can't apply logic to an illogical situation. And that's something without having a kid you can't understand. Everything about him in eating does not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
If he's hungry, he gets worse with what he'll eat. Unless he gets better. There's no consistency. You don't know what's going to happen. So we end up having like all these different foods around just in case. And you can't really prepare for it. But ultimately, I recognize that he's got us figured out.
Right.
So.
And the kicker, or however you want to say the thing, the thing about this is when he's at daycare or wherever you
take him. He still doesn't eat.
Oh, I thought you said he was a lot better at eating when he was at the daycare place.
So there is a lot of work that they do with a no thank you bite, they call it.
Okay.
So I was just talking to his primary care provider at the daycare on Friday. So he'll try a no thank you bite, which he won't do with us. So there is definitely a difference, right? An inconsistency in his behavior between home and there.
Mm-hmm.
He still won't eat it, but he will try a bite.
Okay.
With us, he will look at it from across the fucking room and just shoot that shit down. Like, based on the color, the shit. Did I tell you about the go away? So Erica's making some delicious veggie burrito dinner for us, for mm-hmm. her and I. And Simon was just nearby playing. And so she cut cucumbers into like matchsticks.
Right.
And so she was like, oh, well, at the shape, it's kind of dry right now. It's not too mushy. And the shape is vaguely French fryish. Maybe I can get Simon to try this. So I was just standing here watching him. She goes, Simon, would you like this? And he just looks at her and he pushes it away and he goes, go away, carrot. Didn't even know what it was, but he just assumed he wasn't going to like it. And that's what he does. He just assumes he's not going to like it based on the fact that it isn't neon green and candy. Mm-hmm. So really what I'm looking for is a specialist to be like, your kid's got you figured out. Here are some strategies to successfully introduce new foods. Because it was a battle of wills with me when this started a year ago
mm-hmm.
and I lost. So you can't have a battle of wills with the child. Again, you can't apply any form of rational emotion even to an irrational situation. So the more like just frustrated I got, the more frustrated he got. And it's like, okay, this is escalating and he will always win because he just won't eat until I give him what he wants. So, yeah, I think we've done really well with him. And Erica especially has really fixed his sleep issues. He still takes a little while to fall asleep, but he's way better than he used to be. We've got him, like, reciting books now. We're very good about the TV he watches, all this stuff. But the food thing is the one thing that we can't get past. And I'm just like, I've thrown in the towel. I'm like, we got to bring someone in.
All right, well, kudos to you for asking for help in a situation like this.
Yeah. From someone who knows.
Yes. Yeah. Not from me, obviously.
Not from you. Not from anyone else.
Any of these childless motherfuckers
who think they fucking know.
It's like, it's so obvious. Come on.
We have a friend who has a baby and she listens to a lot of her non-parent friends. And they say, like, and she asks us, she's like, where her sanity check? So we get these, like, my wife gets these texts from her, and we're like, are you what? Like, someone was berating her because you're not taking your baby out enough. It was a newborn, and it was, February. And we were like, hold the fucking phone. Don't take your brand new baby out in fucking 0-degree weather because some dumbass who doesn't have a kid told you you're not getting enough fresh air. No. But that's the kind of shit you deal with, you know? And it's really like crazy to be the sanity check there. It was like, no, dude, that is logical. Don't do that. Just so it's tough, right? Because you mean well when you give advice, but
we do. We want to see. We want Simon to be happy and try new foods. And
yeah, we do too. Well, you always joke about it. Like we had the baby bullet. I'm a huge foodie. I was gonna have like an awesome palate in my kid by the time he was two. He was gonna be eating fucking sushi, even though he's not supposed to. Kid was going to be like, no, I'd like some sea urchin, please. He's going to have a weird British accent when he eats food. Fuck no. Butt and crackers or a bust. He won't even eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He doesn't like bread. What kid does not like bread? He doesn't like cake because he doesn't like bread because somehow they're similar to him. It's that spongy thing. Makes no sense.
That is a little weird.
It's weird. So it's severe enough that we can justify having him checked out just to be like, well, maybe he's got a thing. If he has a thing, great. All right, we figured it out early. Yeah, so that's tomorrow. That's my rant. I really care. My son drives me nuts sometimes with this rant.
That's right. This is kind of therapy for you sometimes.
Yeah, I don't act anymore. This is all I got. I go days on end with only seeing my wife and son because I never leave the house, Mike. Uh-uh. You're like, no, it's my own fault.
We had a little party here 2 weekends ago, right?
We did, yes. It was a combined Erica and Mike's birthday board gaming extravaganza.
Yes. The board gaming wasn't quite as extravagant as we'd hoped, I think.
That was the weakest board gaming party that we've ever had.
It just turned out to be much more hanging out than gaming.
It would turn into a party, which was weird.
Yeah.
Because, like, I threw a lot of parties in college. Like, I used to hang out around a keg in my home and mm-hmm. hang out with people. It kind of felt like that. And I was like, this is cool, but this is not... I still am not playing Libertalia right now.
I know. You really wanted to play that. At least you got to play Dark Gothic.
Yeah, so happy to...
that. And it Colonial was Horror?
Hard, yeah.
Okay.
Holy shit. They ratcheted the difficulty up on that? We really almost lost. Like, oh. Very quickly.
I don't think we've ever gotten close to losing any of the time.
Yeah, that shit changed. Oh my god. Everything in that game is like, you sneezed? Add one to the Shadows track. Oh, you breathed? Add one to the Shadows track. You added one to the Shadows track? I think you better add another one.
So to ease in on this real quickly, Dark Gothic is a
deck building
game.
Based on A Touch of Evil.
Touch of Evil, right.
Which is a group favorite. We haven't played in a while, but we played it a lot. And that, in turn...
Which is a true board game.
In every sense of the word. I have three boards. I bought all the expansions.
And you got Erica, the guys, and you roll Erica the dice, painted and you figures, move the spaces. And
you fight shit.
You pull cards out, and...
You get weapons and amulets. And
yes.
And in turn, that is a fairly successful simplification of the mother of all horrendously complicated board games, Arkham Horror.
Yes. It's like Arkham Horror where you can actually do things.
But that's what the point of it is. That's what he does. Jason Hill takes games. He's like, this game is too complicated. I'm going to make it easier.
Yes. I would much rather play that anytime than Arkham Horror.
Oh, my God.
That goes for most games, though.
I would much rather have my fingernails pulled out of my hand than play Arkham Horror.
So, Dark Gothic is the... sort of even more simplified into a different kind of game.
They keep distilling it down, yeah.
It's purely competitive. Mostly competitive.
It's co-op. I mean...
It's a competitive where you can
one person's trying to win. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, you all win, one person... You all lose, one person wins.
Right.
So, whatever you call that. Co-op competitive.
So, it's all card-based. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. It's similar to Ascension or Dominion or Thunderstone or any of those other deck builder games.
If anything, it has the most in common with Penny Arcade in so much as it has the villains added as well.
Yes.
Which is not a hallmark of every deck building game.
No. And it introduces it has three different... currencies, commodities, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'd say commodities is fair.
Where most deck builders have two.
Well, they have a kill and a buy.
Yes.
But this has, just three commodities that can do
right
whatever the situation calls for, and then a fourth one that can be whatever one of the other ones you want it to
be. So really, it's really just three and a wild card.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So they upped it by one.
Whoa! Yeah. It's really Ascension meets Penny Arcade. That's how I describe it to people.
All right. But you like it? You recommend it?
Yeah. We just played it enough where we're like, we've done, like, there's different combinations of villains you go through, a 1, 2, and 3 level difficulty, mm-hmm. but we did all the characters and all the villains. And we
right, and everybody starts with a character that has somewhat mm-hmm. different abilities.
Which is slightly, not all deck builders do that.
No.
A lot of deck builders have everyone starts with the exact same hand. And yes. You're trying to kill and buy things to improve it while also getting rid of that starting hand because it becomes weaker later in the game.
Right.
This, everyone has a slightly different hand, and the character dictates a special power, which I really like. I think it's a pretty good improvement.
I like it. In general, I like that. I like the way Penny Arcade does it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure I like the way Ascension does it, although it's kind of fun.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah.
It's pretty weak.
It kind of breaks the game even more, though.
Well, but at this point... Because it
makes your choices like, well, now I'm just going to go for this one faction.
But I think that game, like, the joy of that game at this point is that they are just breaking it for the app now. As I told you a couple days ago, I finally broke the, like, literally broke the game.
Yes.
I had five...
This is on, you're playing on your iPad.
I was playing on my iPad, and I have done... So you're a just typical playing game, against
the computer.
Right. Against two opponents. I prefer a three-player game.
Oh, okay.
And there's certain combinations of the many expansions that I know there are certain powered cards that if you combine them, like, it's very difficult to get them all to line up. There's the face again.
Yep. Adaiyu is one of them. Has so, to be one of them, right?
Adaiyu has to be one of them because it's just a broken card. It's so powerful. It's the original Black Lotus from Magic. It's just too powerful. But there's a card that lets you double... Adaiyu. So you have three of him going.
Right. And I had that before when I was playing on the app on one of my tablets.
Right. And I've done that a few times, and I can get around the score of about 5,000, which is, I mean, a normal game is 100 points for the highest. So it's ridiculous you get up to high. But then, because of the portals, I got a second one of that card.
Oh, because the portals are infinite?
Yeah, they just
the keep deck going. Never runs out of portals.
It's only app, so you there's no real deck. It's just it literally
because when I ran God, we're getting so nerdy in this. when I did that in a similar situation, I was just running out of cards in the deck in the draw deck.
Well, once you get that one card that puts the whole deck or the whole main area filled with portals, you just reinvigorate it. I got a cycle going where the game was literally never going to end. Because you could kill monsters after you kill them again. I just had this perfect cycle going. So I got a second version of that card that doubles Adaiyu. So I had five Adaiyus going. So I had five Jesus Christs on the board. And they were all like, dude, I'm so fucking powerful right now. So every time I played a card, the game would just come to a grinding halt because all these stacked bonuses had to play out with animations every time I played a single card. And I got up to about 8,000 something points. And then it just crashed. The game was like, fuck you, I'm done. It was tracking so many cards that when you highlight a card to see what it is, it couldn't bring it up anymore. Because my finger wasn't fine enough to highlight the edge of the card.
Yeah, I got into that situation.
I had a whole nother turn left. I was going to break 20,000 points. I could feel it. I was so excited. I was like, this is going to be a day of me playing on and off.
So, back to the party, another game that we had that we played, I think one of the two games that we played that night. We played three games.
You only played one game.
I only played one game.
We felt so bad for you. We still want to give you Smike's Choice Night where you get to play whatever games
Well, because we had certain friends, and I was going to let the other tables go, and then I was going to play something with the people who had been
You were with sitting the gabbers.
Out, and they were just like, it's okay, we're just going to hang out.
I'm going to gab.
All right. I sacrificed my gaming... credit for you guys.
Oh, don't give me that shit.
No.
You could have gotten in on a game.
I could have, but then I was like, we'll play some Puzzle Strike or something else.
You couldn't corral people into
anyway.
don't make it a martyr.
Anyway, martyr. It was a fun night.
It was
the first game we played though was Mysterium, and I wanted to mention something about that.
That was a great game.
This is the second time we'd played it.
Mm-hmm.
First time for several. It's a game that is. It's like. Two games. It's like Clue, which most people know what Clue is.
Yep.
It's the find out who was it in which room with which murder weapon. Colonel Mustard in the library with a...
Candlestick.
With a candlestick. And Dixit would be the other game, combining with that.
Just like the Rorschach test version of apples to apples.
Dixit being a game where you try to guess what somebody's talking about. When they make a cryptic phrase that describes like an abstract art card.
Incredibly abstract. That's just filled to the brim with iconographic imagery that could be interpreted different ways. But the premise is cool. So there's a ghost murdered by a person in a room.
In the past.
In the past. And once every All Hallows Eve or whatever mumbo jumbo. They can communicate via dreams of psychics, mediums.
Right.
So a bunch of mediums come to the house, this mansion, on this night,
mm-hmm.
and they have like 6 hours. That's how the game tracks rounds.
Yes.
And the ghost communicates with them with these abstract cards.
And the ghost is talk. Another player.
Yeah, so I was the ghost.
It's very unbalanced in that sense, but in a good way.
It's asymmetric. In a fun way.
Asymmetric.
Asymmetric, yeah, I wouldn't say unbalanced.
Is the key word there. So yes, the ghost has in their view, mm-hmm. where nobody else can see, it's like psychic A has this combination of person, place and thing. Mm-hmm. Psychic B has their assigned combination. So the ghost knows who is assigned to what combination.
Right.
Nobody knows. And then they've got to give out these bizarre, surreal dream cards and have the people try to guess, oh, which person does this go with?
So they're looking at the table, and unlike in Clue, you don't have to go to different rooms to make guesses or whatever. You have to figure out the person out of a pool of people that are the possible, like the murderer assigned to each player. Yes. And then from there you move on. So what I discovered was it's impossible, no matter how good or how bad, how screwed you are with the cards you have in your hand, it is impossible to know exactly how the player is because they can work together, how they're going to interpret the card. Like, you can't see everything that's coming as the ghost. So I kept missing things that they thought were incredibly important that I never even noticed in the card.
Yes. And the other thing is that there's like at least one extra card
yep.
out there for there's the people to look positive. At. And as the ghost, you're not really looking at that one.
Nope, not at all. Which I definitely would recommend doing next time, is really remembering to look at that to make sure you're not sending. Sometimes you can't help it. Sometimes you just
can't help it.
You can't cash your hand in again. Cards.
But it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun and agonizing. Like you're so at the ghost, you're just like, I can't say anything. I just want to get this right. But what I discovered was for me the trick, and it really sped up when I figured this out, is sometimes you had to build a foundation to work off of mm-hmm. with the cards you were providing. So that because you would, if I gave you a card, right, or two cards, and you guessed wrong, those cards stayed in front of you. And then I would right. give you more cards to try to help you get the same thing. So I started saying, what cards are out right now? Okay, how do I combine what I have right now, which may not be that great, with what's out right now to tell a story to them? And that, once I got that down, then the game sped up for me and everyone got to where I needed them to be.
Okay.
So it was a very specific strategy.
Yes, and I think not all people would enjoy playing that ghost role.
I loved it.
I thought you would.
Yeah.
But it's not... most people are probably going to be happier just being one of the psychics and trying to figure out what's...
Oh, it's fun.
What matches up.
We've tested it. You don't have to be sober to play it. It's a lot of fun when you're not sober.
So, maybe yeah.
not for the ghost. Yeah.
And you can... I think you can have up to seven total people playing it.
Six one ghost and six, one yeah, ghost, yep.
six psychics. So definitely recommend that.
Two thumbs up to Mysterium.
Yes.
I'll give two thumbs up, especially to Dark Gothic with the expansion Colonial Horror, because it was a little too easy initially, but that expansion really made it more interesting.
Yeah, and just one more thing about Mysterium. It's, when you open it, there are so many bits right. in it. It's
yeah.
just overwhelming. You think,
I was
my
freaking out.
God, how insanely complicated is this?
It's really not.
It's not.
No, you're right.
This is a very... easy game to learn, very easy game to play, especially for the psychics.
Yeah. So, there's a lot more like kind of management of stuff as it goes.
Yes. But. It's very easy to pick up. So this would be a great game to get into, a great game for a party,
mm-hmm.
For people who are not that haven't played a lot of board games.
This and Ladies and Gentlemen are like two and Werewolf.
I would say Ladies and Gentlemen is a little more complicated than
that. But I still think we've played it with people who aren't super gamers at parties where there's been drinking and it's been a hit.
Okay.
You know, like I'd say those three games.
I would point to Mysterium before Ladies and Gentlemen.
I'd go Werewolf, Mysterium, Ladies and Gentlemen, okay. in the order of like complexity. But I think that all of them, if you get the right mindset, any of them can be fun to a non-hardcore board gamer
mm-hmm.
in a party setting. So it's cool that we have a little subset of games that work for that now.
Yeah.
Still want to play Libertalia.
Someday.
Someday. My pirate life. Josh had a really fun pirate game he brought over like a month ago. Very different than Libertalia. It was like everyone had a little board of tiles and you kind of built it out as you went and sailed in a circle over and over again. It was really cool.
But it was pirates?
Yeah, it was pirates. It was Dark Waters.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Pirates of Dark Water.
Okay, yeah.
Which is one of the best cartoons ever in the history of mankind.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, you were pretty young when that
doesn't came out. Matter. that was the shit. I have my only serious head injury was because of that cartoon.
I am willing to bet it does not hold up that well.
I almost bought it on Lightning Deal until I realized it wasn't being sold by Hanna-Barbera. It was like some weird sketchy company doing VOD.
Oh.
And I saw, so I read the reviews. The quality could
have been awful.
Yeah, I read the reviews and they were like, everyone was like, this doesn't work. Like, I can't get this to work in my DVD player. Why did I pay $20 for this? So, I don't know. No, Eric and I were watching it like 2 years ago. I have it on a format that will remain unnamed. I still love that show.
All right.
It's dark. It was a dark fantasy, like, alternate show, like, you know, fantasy world show for kids. Because it was the 90s when they would kind of do dark shit for kids and everything wasn't nerfed and sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah.
You know, so there was, like, some disturbing stuff in it. And it's pirates.
Okay.
Pirates.
Who doesn't like pirates?
Pirates in fantasy. It was basically the Pathfinder we didn't play. Pirates in a fantasy setting. Well, we never got to your book or mine.
You had a book too?
I was gonna cube you.
What?
I told you I was gonna cube you.
Oh, you're gonna give me the
cube.
The cube. The cube treatment.
Which was not cutting you into a bunch of small cubes. Which
happens in movies a lot.
I can name
which
at least
happened
two.
In Cube.
I can name at least two. Cube and Resident Evil. Fucking, there was a short period of time in Hollywood where cubing was in.
Yeah, that really bothered me. I mean, those scenes disturb you? They do.
Like, why?
It's just the whole idea of the person
being whole for a second.
Yeah, being whole and then knowing that they're dead.
Do they though?
I think so.
I feel like your neural,
you know, something is awfully not right
for like a split second. Then you're, I don't know. Well, okay. Yeah. Did you see Ghost Ship?
Yeah.
Do you remember that
scene? That was awful too.
Okay. Cause it's very similar, right?
It is.
Yeah. It made no physical sense how that winding a wire that tightly would do that. But, what a weird movie that was. What other movies did that? Not a good movie. Oh, 13 Ghosts.
13 Ghosts. Did that happen in there?
The door, the sliding glass door.
Oh yeah,
that was gruesome.
That was the same guy.
Oh yeah, that's right. As Ghost Ship. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That was. But I mean, like, Ghost Ship was one thing, but 13 Ghosts was, we're gonna do it, and then only part of the person's body's gonna move, and then it's a transparent, like, cutting, and you're like, I do not need to see that. Why? Yeah, I guess that is just a trope that a lot of movies do. Did we still haven't seen it yet? But did Crimson Peak do that kind of thing?
No. Crimson Peak is not like that at all.
Okay.
Crimson Peak is a classic gothic tale.
Okay.
It's not about gore or anything like that.
Subtle horror?
It's not subtle, because it is. I mean, it's all gothic and moody, and it's all about characters.
Okay. Well, I know the set design is and all that.
The set is its character. Own character. I mean, that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah, we need to see that.
It's a very good movie. I strongly recommend it, but don't go in it thinking, oh, it's going to be a bunch of scary ghosts popping up and stuff.
Well, it's Guillermo del Toro, so it's like, I don't know which Guillermo I'm getting here, you know, because you never really know. Am I getting artful horror like Pan's Labyrinth? Am I getting Hellboy?
It's kind of neither.
Well, it's just it's something. Well, I mean, he also did, right, didn't he do the robot movie?
The robot movie.
Pacific Rim?
Did he?
Was that Guillermo del Toro?
Oh, I think so.
I think that was him. We've done it for a while, right?
Yeah. I didn't care for it that much.
I really want to see Pan's Labyrinth 2, the Lamper thing.
The what?
The Labyrinth thing. I'm kidding. The Labyrinth thing.
The ending of that was pretty clear that there wasn't going to be a sequel.
I don't know. No, I interpret it the other way, because it's too sad otherwise.
Ah.
Man, that movie. Ugh. That face scene.
The bottle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that still isn't as bad as that other one with Monica Bellucci.
Which one are we talking about now?
I don't remember what it's called. There's a scene, Erica watched it, it's like an art house film, but there's a scene where she gets raped for like 20 minutes. And if it isn't actually 20 minutes, it feels like 20 minutes. And it's horrible to watch.
That seems just really gratuitous.
I think the point is it's a study in like voyeurism and like how awful a human being are you for sitting through the scene. But then later there's a scene, so her husband or boyfriend is out to get the guy that did that to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then finds someone in a nightclub and then does like a bash your face in scene like Pan's Labyrinth, but apparently it's worse. I couldn't watch the movie after the rape scene.
Okay. That was just Am I a better person for not ever having seen this film?
You're going to live a more fulfilling life. Okay. Having seen the film. But I can't. The name will come to me after it. I don't know. I can't. My mind just will. It slides off it like water on a wind, a rain-exed windshield. I just can't even think of it right now. My mind's like, nope, somewhere else.
All right. And another quick little tidbit. We started watching a couple of animes.
Oh, we have to talk about Jessica Jones.
Okay.
Really quick.
Can we squeeze this in?
Okay. Yeah.
How are we going to do this without spoilers?
Stop listening. Okay, go. No, what were you talking about before that?
Okay, two animes. One is, I think it's either Zombie High School or Undead High School or something like that. It's awful. It's like pure fan service. It's boobs and panties and undead.
And gratuitous decapitation.
And gratuitous everything.
Sweet.
Gratuitous boob, gratuitous panty shots. It's sad. It's really, it's like, no, this is...
You're not selling
it.
Yeah. Okay,
no.
So it's a two thumbs down?
Yeah, and then not doing it in the... I feel awful for saying it this way, but the much more entertaining, ironic, and humorous way it was done in Kill la Kill.
Okay.
Which has boobs and panties, but it's really a whole other beast. And I'm probably a terrible human being for...
See, we each have something. Like that. What was the other anime?
Pass on that.
Pass on Zombie Undead High School.
I'm going to get the name wrong, but I think it's Assassination Classroom.
Why is everything about weird shit in schools with them?
That's their thing. This is not at all... There's no fan services.
There's no assassinations.
Well, there's no fan service.
Okay.
None of the overt, gratuitous boobies, panty stuff. It's a bunch of kids who have this bizarre teacher who's not an alien... But he's got, his head looks like an emoji, like a big round emoji, and he's got a bunch of tentacles, and his body is this weird yellow membrane.
This is what he looks like all the time?
He looks like this all the time.
Did people comment on it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Apparently he blew up the moon.
So he's Chairface from The Tick.
Yes. He blew up the moon. They made the moon a permanent crescent.
Right.
And has promised to do the same to the Earth within a year, unless someone can kill him. But he's incredibly fast.
Okay.
He moves, he's like Quicksilver fast. In the good one. Quicksilver fast.
Does he teach?
What? Yes.
What does he
teach? He struck this deal with the government. It is a little bit silly, but
I like the premise. It's interesting. Okay.
It is interesting. It's very interesting. He struck a deal with the Japanese government.
Okay.
Of course. He'll let people try to kill him if they let him teach a class. If they let him teach students in this high school.
Like a subject of his choice?
He's just their main, he's their main teacher.
But does he follow the curriculum?
Yeah, he's great. He's like the most amazing teacher. But the kids are constantly trying to kill him.
And he doesn't kill them in return.
No. He cleans them. He combs their hair or something. Like the kid tries to shoot him and he like takes the gun away because he's incredibly fast, he does this all in the blink of an eye. Uh-huh. He'll like give them a new hairdo and groom their eyebrows and clean their clothes.
What?
He's really, really nice.
What
most
a
of the time.
Weird premise.
It is really very bizarre.
Is there like story to why he's trying to do it that you're trying to figure out? Is it all just
they're not really getting in, they're kind of hinting at it, but there's more story involved. The other thing is that the students he's teaching are the low end students. They've been kicked out of the regular classrooms put in this and
so it's the special, it's the misfits are their last
it's the
hope.
Misfits classroom. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much away, but they're just constantly, and he's like, yeah, try to kill me. And he like kind of gives them tips on what to do. And they have these special knives and bullets they're basically just rubber, but it's some sort of material that will kill, that they can hurt him, but they can't, like they can shoot each other with these things. And the knives are like rubber. So they don't hurt people.
Okay.
Just, so they can only hurt him.
I just want to take a moment to swing really socialist for a second and just tell you that rubber bullets do kill people.
No.
I'm just saying this is a pretty common misconception. They're worse than BBs because they're still projected at
I'm talking about the ones in the show.
Okay.
They're like BBs in the show.
Okay. Well, again, just as an aside, cops are supposed to fire rubber bullets at the ground and bounce them into people. And then when they don't do that, people die. Anyway, go on.
Okay.
That was my public service Bernie announcement.
They're not going as fast as regular bullets. They're BB speed in this anime.
He's really weak against this material.
It's like the coating of them will pop his skin.
His emoji.
Yes. So okay. It highly recommended.
It sounds I'm not even being sarcastic. It sounds fucking fascinating. Like I want to go watch that right now. Might be the alcohol talking.
But. Okay. Now we can spoil Jessica Jones real quick.
Well, no, let's say this. So we're running pretty long, so we'll end it.
Okay.
And then we'll go on after that. So stay, if you've seen Jessica Jones, stay on after the musical outro, and you can listen to us talk about that, I guess, because that's what you're into, apparently, if you're listening at this point in the podcast.
All right.
And if not, it's been great. We are buddies in space. You are.
S. Michael Smith.
Got you at the wrong moment there, didn't I? Who am I? I am M. Michael Carassi.
You better read the thing. Oh, had that last drink there.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. Don't forget to check out my first episode of Clint Westfall's Broda, available on YouTube. You can find it on stolendress.com as well. It's fun. It's coming together. There'll be another episode in a couple weeks. So, cue the music, maestro. I don't remember.
So, the end of Jessica Jones almost got too nihilistic for me.
Okay.
When it really turned a corner when they had him in, you know, they captured him
in the room,
in the
isolation chamber,
and it took some real dark turns at that point.
Yeah, with his mom and
yeah, and after that, and especially with Hope getting killed, literally killing Hope
yeah,
which was her whole driving. Motivation was to save this at least one person.
It spun out for a couple episodes after that. I know I at the Hope moment was a low point for me.
I think it was. I think it definitely was. I think
you're
was.
Right. Yeah, because and I got like I started to kind of wander in my interest. Like I was loving every second of that show, and then there was like two episodes there. It's like they revealed that he doesn't have a power over her anymore, which I suspected, but they showed it and it's really exciting. And then it just you're right. It got really just into its own. Unhappiness for a little while.
Yeah.
And the thing they wallowed too long.
What's his name? The cop boyfriend who was just going nuts and killing people. And...
Well, that's actually out of a comic book.
Yeah, but doesn't matter.
It's still, well, it's going to get sillier if they're going to do the comic book stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
But when they having him go rogue and all at the same time.
Yeah, it's always the inconvenient timing issue. Like, yeah, and I think Erica pointed this out too. They fell into a couple of tropes that stuck out because the show had been so strong that if they had maybe cut two episodes out of it, the overall run, it probably just would have been brilliant straight on through. But you're right. It lost steam and it got a little high in its own fumes for a little while there.
Yes.
But then it did come back. It did get its mojo back.
I think so. And there were some nice moments with... And there were some why didn't anybody think of this before moments... With Patsy going in with headphones on.
Like, yeah, that was awesome.
Why didn't anybody do this before?
But it's such an incredible moment when a show or a story does that and you're like, thank you. This is just really smart. Granted, she was up against a bunch of mind control cops who would have shot her in a heartbeat, but you know, it was still funny.
But she wasn't the right person for them to shoot, I guess.
Yeah, again, there was a little bit of weirdness with that, but it was still a cool scene. Yeah, that was a good moment. I did like it when he just like told the whole group of people that she was standing near, like, okay, just beat each other to death. And then she was like trying to like, do I go after him? Do I stop them from killing each other? Like, she was just surrounded by mayhem.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess you get down to it. And if she had just killed him earlier, so much of this would have been
oh yeah
avoided.
It's the Superman problem.
Yes.
he was too powerful. And from a writing standpoint, when you're shackled to the format of American television, even Netflix still has to follow certain things, you know what I mean, in terms of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain inherent flaws to that, and that one of them is like, well, we have to keep him around for a while.
Yeah.
And it's like, either he should have won,
right,
or she should have killed him earlier. So, right. Yeah.
So that's my biggest problem, is we're coming out of this with, well, she'd have been a much better hero if she'd killed more people or learned to kill faster. And I think that's not a good lesson, I guess. Maybe they'll address this in the next season.
I hope they do, but you gotta give her credit. She really tried not to.
She did. She tried not to. Really, but that was as we get to the end, that was a bad call.
Right. But that is a favorite. I think it's a byproduct of the postmodern superhero thing. So you had Frank Miller and Alan Moore, right? They did The Watchmen. Alan Moore mm-hmm. did Watchmen. Frank Miller did Batman Returns, or whatever it's called, Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
So those introduced the postmodern sociopath superhero. So now we've moved past that to like Misfits. Did you ever watch Misfits? I forget.
I don't think so.
So Misfits is navel-gazing teenagers get superpowers that are kind of shitty. So not great people get not great powers. What happens? So that's just new. That's the new thing I'm seeing a lot in superheroes. It's like, well, okay, what if like a normal person gets powers that aren't great? You know, how does that work? And what I'm noticing with that, and I think I'm risking losing my train of thought, but there's a lot of like reverse moral code that they tend to follow. So it's like, I really don't want to kill. I've seen this a couple times. I really don't want to kill someone,
mm-hmm.
but you need to. And do you know what? They're doing the exact same thing with the Punisher Daredevil stuff right now.
But the thing is, I think the only reason she didn't want to kill him first was literally so that she could save Hope.
Right. I mean, they set it up so there was a really good reason for her not to kill him.
Because otherwise, I think she would have been like, yeah, I'm just going to kill him.
Yeah. And she should have. She still should have. But, I mean, saving Hope was saving herself, right? She was fixed in some way, addressing the damage she had experienced being under his sway.
So, I'm not sure where that's going to, where we come out after that.
She's slightly more broken and slightly less broken. Hmm. She's different broken.
Yeah.
And then there's a new big bad.
Yeah.
Her words.
Yeah, I know.
It's still, you know what? It's still so hard to get a superhero story right. it's so hard. I think that it's a brilliant show, and I forgive it its foibles. It could have been two episodes shorter and probably still been, it actually would have been better, I think. But, you know, I mean, she should have killed him the first chance she got, but then what was the rest of the season about?
Right.
You know, then you wrap up an entire television series into like one season.
Yeah.
Which would be really funny, like if you're doing an intentional mini series and it's like, okay, I killed the big bad first episode. Oh, it's a bigger bad. Okay, I took them down. What next? Oh, they had a center. Okay, dead. Alien invasion? Solved. I retire. That I would like to see. Or in reverse of that would be Miracle Man, where Alan Moore was like, okay, we get to the point where comic book ends. Now we keep going. Oh, you have to get abstract because you can't keep a story going normally. Oh, now we're going to create heaven. Okay, we're still going. All right. All right. What does heaven look like? Oh, okay. There's a psychological test. Oh, no, we're still going. Okay. I'm pointing really far away.
Yes.
I love that reads well on the microphone.
It reads to me.
That's really all I care about. I mean, who listens to this anyway? They're not listening right now. No one stayed on after the meeting. We went on for another 10 minutes. So did you like Jessica Jones in the end?
Yes.
Okay. So you forgive it?
Yeah. I'll watch it. I'll watch more.
Okay.
I think Patsy's my favorite character.
She's really likable. And they're doing stuff with her. Because they're like relaunching a comic book that has been dormant for decades to coincide with this.
And she's not broken like Jessica is.
She's still broken.
But she's a lot stronger, but she's kind of strong because she has the luxury of being strong-willed.
Yeah, also, they are very... There's a codependence there that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is where she is because of Jessica coming into her life and standing up to her mother for her.
Right.
You know, and they did spend enough time on that for it to be a thing, but not enough, I think, for her to really recognize, like, I actually would not be, I would be a wreck without Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that moment's happened yet, that it should at some point, you know. So it's nice. I mean, they're two damaged people. You're right. She's not as damaged, and she's a little bit stronger because she wasn't raped for X number of whatever by a mind control nut job.
Yes. So,
there is that.
And they did get into that, even though you guys were kind of like, no, that wasn't really... I don't think they got into rape, but they did.
In the comic, they... In the show, yeah, they did later.
Yeah. We had that discussion earlier on.
Okay.
When we were just starting, we were both just starting to watch it.
Uh-huh.
And my comment, and I might have brought this up on the podcast, was that whenever it's a female character, her damage in the past goes frequently along those lines of,
yeah,
oh, something happened, she was raped.
Right.
It's a trope. And
I do remember this conversation. Okay, you're right. It did end up going there, but
whereas if it's a guy who's got that kind of damage in his past, it's usually like he wasn't able to save someone.
Yeah, that's true.
And that I find that a little bit troublesome.
But at least she murdered someone against her will.
All right,
they rounded around a little bit.
Yes,
it's ultimately about being powerless, and that is definitely what it was with her.
Yes,
her power, her ability to defend herself and make her own decisions was taken away. So yeah, I see what you mean.
Still a better female character than most other TV or Netflix shows.
No, that's true. Two thumbs up from me.
Two thumbs up. Yeah. I'll watch next season.
Same definitely. Here. All right, we're going to end this now. Thanks for hanging out with us.